Nick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. So the call for the dreaded I word growing as two women from Pennsylvania in the House of Representatives, Mary Gay Scanlon and Madeline Dean, have both put out statements today calling for an impeachment inquiry. In fact, Madeline Dean, who we've had on the program a number of times over the years, especially when she was in the State House, says, "I take no pleasure in calling for this historic action, and yet I do so with an American sense of optimism that our government of, by, and for the people is far stronger than the singularly amoral president." I like that. I agree with her. And the hope is that, you know, we begin the inquiry, hearings, subpoenas, all of that stuff. And here to share some thoughts on, you know, is this smoke, is this mirrors, or is this possible? I've asked our good friend Sarah Kenzior to come talk with us. Sarah's a writer, scholar, host of Gaslit Nation, also the author of a fabulous book, The View from Flyover Country. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, optimism here that, you know, the growing call from the weeds are now maybe going to move Nancy Pelosi?
I wouldn't say optimism. I would certainly praise their actions. It's very good to see representatives who are actually doing their job and trying to carry out their constitutional oath and protect the American public from a brutal, corrupt autocrat linked to a mafia syndicate. However, Nancy Pelosi seems utterly unconcerned with that, has in fact mocked the calls for impeachment, has put out disinformation about how impeachment works in invented terms like self-impeaching. I hope that other representatives join in because, you know, 70% of the Democrats want impeachment. I think, Trump is already historically unpopular. If there are televised impeachment hearings, I am pretty sure that that level of popularity is going to plunge when more Americans are aware of exactly how corrupt this administration is.
Any hope that Republicans outside of Justin Amash will come around, or are they completely corrupt?
I think it's possible. I mean, who saw Justin Amash coming? Like, I didn't predict that. I honestly didn't know that much about him. I think it's possible, that you're just going to see maybe representatives who understand what the long-term consequences of the Trump administration are for people like them. You know, if you're an ordinary person, if you're not from some kind of millionaire dynasty, if you're not someone who's willing to give up all of your values, give up all your personal aspirations to serve this regime, you know, and you're taking that long-term view, you're going to try to stop this dead in its tracks. You know, you're going to try to stop this before it hurts you. And I have a feeling, kind of looking at Justin Amash's past votes and what kind of person he is, you know, he's a pretty independent-minded guy. He's voted against the Republicans on several occasions. And, you know, while I don't agree with, many of these libertarian stances, I think he values independent thought. If you value independent thought, this is not an administration for you, and America will not become a country for you. And I think he's trying to preserve freedom, you know, which is what libertarianism is supposed to be about. It often kind of isn't. But I think maybe he sincerely believes that and he's doing the right thing.
And he actually read the Mueller report.
Yeah, he did his homework. He read the Mueller report. I saw a picture of him today in Washington, D.C., talking to a bunch of teenagers that were doing a tour, you know, of different landmarks in the city. And I mean, honestly, it was one of the nicest things I'd seen in a while. Just somebody voluntarily doing their civic duty. You know, I've been asking the Democrats to put together like a frequently asked questions guide to how impeachment works, because as I said before, Pelosi has been lying. You know, I have a constitutional law expert on deck. Like, I have a guy, who's wrote a book about impeachment, who knows all about it, to ask my legal questions to, because Pelosi lies. Trump lies. Like, they are not just sort of bending the truth, they are putting out actual disinfo. For example, yesterday she claimed that the Senate basically needs to give permission to the House in order to have an impeachment inquiry begin. And a lot of people believe that. She also said that House committees will be dissolved if there are hearings. That's That's just a lie. And so I'm glad that I know a constitutional law expert, but most people don't. And they really need to hear from an authoritative source how this process actually works, because they're getting disinformation. And I feel bad for them. You know, every citizen should have the right to know this. And it's very unfortunate that they need to know it. It's unfortunate that we're in a position with an administration so corrupt that this is even happening. But I hope those Democrats, who are looking to impeach, who are trying to hold the administration accountable, also concentrate on communicating to the public what actually is at stake and how this process works, that it's not instantaneous, that it's not, decided at the whim of Mitch McConnell, none of this nonsense.
Right. No, I mean, but, here's the thing. I only took, I have eighth grade civics under my belt. and I know that the impeachment starts in the House. This is how I learned in eighth grade. Articles of impeachment emanate from the House. They're tried in the Senate. The Supreme Court Chief Justice is the judge. And you have the hearing in the Senate. That's what I learned in eighth grade. I think all of us learned that, no?
I think so. I think there are sometimes some younger folks who don't know. I don't think civics is taught as much as it is. But, I had someone today asking me about this on Twitter, and they were a fan of Nancy Pelosi, and they had understood from her that the Senate gives permission to the House to begin impeachment, because that's what she was saying. And she just couldn't believe, that this speaker, this person who is in this position of power and has so much responsibility during a constitutional crisis, would just make stuff up. But she did, and so I sent her some information, some interview with actual legal scholars. Yeah, I mean, things need to be done. People do have, I think, a limited understanding of civics, but it's made much worse by the sheer volume of lies in the public sphere, mostly from the GOP and from Trump, but also from the Pelosi camp as well.
Now, would you venture a guess on why? I mean, because I've had some people say, look, I'm still struggling with the impeachment thing because we end up with Pence. But I do think you have to have the hearings. I want all the information public. I think we need this kind of transparency. Is it possible this is just a political ploy to say, look, we're going to get mired down in an impeachment and we're not going to move our agenda? And it's her calculus that that's what we win on, what they win on in 2020. I'm curious how you see this played.
I mean, it makes that idea of it being a political calculus makes no sense on a number of levels. Like, first, they're not moving their agenda anyway. It's stuck in the House. And, I think impeachment would likely pass in the House, and then, the Senate would not convict. And even
right.
if they did, I don't think Trump would leave. The point is the hearings. The point is to get the evidence into the public domain. And that affects not just Trump. I mean, the impeachment hearing would be about Trump, but he has a very wide criminal circle that includes people like Pence. Pence, who was handpicked by a convicted felon Manafort, for example, is probably going to factor into these impeachment hearings. So that argument is spurious. But the thing that's sort of interesting to me is that, this is now become a contentious issue. It really wasn't before. I remember in January, people were talking about impeachment, Democrats were, and people, of course, they were in favor of it, because when a president violates the law, when they violate the Constitution in so many different ways, like emoluments, high crimes and misdemeanors, abuse of the pardon power, as well as obstruction and all of the things in the Mueller probe, of course you impeach. Like, this is just not controversial. It only became controversial when Pelosi, very flippantly, very glibly, as people suffer and die, said he wasn't worth it, basically saying it's not worth it to stop this abuser. It's not worth it to stop this person who is violating our constitutional rights. And for the last 2 months, there has been a battle among Democrats about what to do next. But what I have seen that I find really troubling are all these voters, all these young people especially, who turned out in droves for the midterms, who are canvassing, a lot of whom, voted for the first time for their self-protection, because they see that Trump is an autocrat and they want to protect the country and they want to protect themselves. This is especially true of people of color, of gays and lesbians, of other persecuted groups. And the Democrats aren't doing anything. And so I've seen all these folks say, well, I'm not voting. I'm just not doing it. Like, what is the difference? There's no difference between these two parties. And, I still say vote, because one party is an existential threat. One party is deeply flawed. and has a appeaser as its speaker. And so that's a serious problem. But I do, I'm just going to make it very clear. Please vote for the Democrats. Please vote against Trump, no matter who runs. But I cannot blame them at all for being disappointed, for being hurt, for being outraged. You know, it's such a betrayal of responsibility on Pelosi's part.
No, I'm with you.
I don't think it's a political move.
My fear is that we end up with another Mueller-type situation where the people believe institutionally. Because I'm looking at Mueller right now, and they're going back and forth over him testifying. How much should be public? How much should be private? I'm like, all of it should be public, damn it.
Yeah, I mean, Mueller's a wuss. Like, I've been trying to tell people that for like a year and a half, and all I kept hearing is, oh, he's so strong, he has such integrity, he was a Marine. And I'm watching him carry out this investigation, and, for all the Rick Smith fans out there who want to hear the archives of my growing case against Robert Mueller, you can go and listen to me as Mueller screwed up again and again, and I described it on this show. And so I don't know why people had faith in him, but it's absolutely pathetic that he won't come out and speak to the public, that he won't testify. He won't even articulate why Barr summarized his long report wrong. There are many things in the report that were that should have been in it, like the fact that Trump has been connected to the Russian mafia for several decades, that were not in it, that I would like to hear more about at a hearing. And he just will not, he will not do his job either. But that doesn't mean, though, that there are other people who won't. You know, we already see representatives who are doing their job, even though Pelosi will not do her job. And so I think you have to look for the people who are actually trying to save this country and not put your faith in a baseless savior, in somebody who doesn't deserve any of your respect, who doesn't deserve the praise that they're just, bathing in. I mean, it's gross. Like, the same is true of Comey. For those who are, naive enough to be punked by Bill Barr, like, I don't even know what to tell you guys. But, none of these people deserve our respect if they're not earning it. They're public servants. They're supposed to serve the public. That's us. So we deserve a lot better than this.
Well, I'm right there with you. But I look at Mary Gay Scanlon and Madeleine Dean today, and good on them for coming out and calling for impeachment. Also, Elijah Cummings. Yesterday, the judge in the case of the Mazars USA, and I love the statement that they came up with out of this court, this judge saying, it's simply not fathomable that a constitution that grants Congress the power to remove a president for reasons including criminal behavior would deny Congress the power to investigate him for unlawful conduct, past or present, even without formally opening an impeachment inquiry. Because, look, Elijah Cummings is looking for the tax returns, and they want this Mazars USA to turn them over, and which this judge is saying you're going to have to do. And I also find it interesting that the appeal could end up in front of Merrick Garland.
Wait, you cut out for a sec. What?
I find it interesting that the appeal could end up in front of Merrick Garland.
Yeah, wouldn't that be a twist of fate? Yeah, no, it's definitely good that there are people on the ball with this. What I don't like seeing, though, is this kind of belief that the courts are going to save everything, because that's another false hope. What we've seen is Trump stacking the courts. We've seen judges who have been threatened, like the judge in Manafort's case that went on to say he had led an otherwise blameless life. We've seen juries who are threatened. The first thing, not the first thing, but after they've taken over the legislature, what an autocrat does, or an aspiring autocrat does, is, conquer the judiciary, make sure that we don't have a free and viable court system. And that hasn't completely happened yet, but we're certainly seeing it. We're seeing it in the Supreme Court. We saw that with Kavanaugh, who still needs to be investigated. We're seeing things at the Department of Justice with Bill Barr, as an autocratic henchman. So, I think you just got to, when you're fighting this, you have to fight in every possible way you can, at every level you can, with every good person that you can find. So, yeah, they should pursue all these court battles. They should pursue his taxes. But they've got to learn to think like Trump, to think like a dirty Republican, think like Roger Stone, and think of the absolute worst slimiest, most horrible, vicious thing that they could do in any given situation. And it doesn't matter if it's legal. It doesn't matter if it's something that would bring a normal person shame. That thing is the thing they're going to do. And so they need to anticipate their moves. And it's just driving me nuts. I mean, I think in some cases it is maybe naivete, but I keep hearing how Pelosi's this, like, great strategist, and I'm kind of like, you know, I mean, I got a lot of flack for saying that she's very Neville Chamberlain, you know, she's striking the bad faith bargain with a broken system and appeasing an autocrat, and so, you know, something needs to be done about that.
Yeah, I'm with you. Did you see Jeff Daniels on MSNBC the other day? He said, look, if Trump gets reelected, it's the end of democracy.
He's absolutely right. And I want, you know, it's a hard thing to think about. I think especially for people who've never been to an autocratic state, never lived in one, maybe don't know how they work. You know, they're seeing, you know, pieces of it. You know, we're kind of moving towards semi-authoritarianism. I think we are already basically out of democracy. And of course, we've seen authoritarian practices held up by law in our own country. You know, that was slavery. That was Jim Crow. That was internment camps. Like, it has happened here before. But what we're going to see are those kind of policies, implemented on a massive scale and with just incredible cruelty and surrender of rights. Like, if you think the economy is bad now, wait till you see, you know, when all protections are gone, when all health care access is gone, when public education, you know, I mean, just anything that you take for granted, freedom of speech, for those of us in media, our ability to work in media, to run podcasts and radio shows and write articles, like, that is all very much on the line. And it's a terrifying future to look at, you know, especially if you have children. So that's why I urge people to be realistic, you know, and to look into that darkness and figure out a way to fight it and to definitely support those representatives who are out there fighting, because, you know, it is risky work. Like, I've been severely threatened, like, over the course of the last few years, and especially in the last couple of weeks. I can't even imagine what these folks, you know, who hold power in office are going through. So, you know, they really need our support.
Yeah, especially when you've got an echo chamber like Fox News, like the right-wing talk radio that dominates the airwaves of this country. When you've got that blather constantly hammering in people's ear, the misinformation, the, you know, the propaganda that they're just constantly fed. You know, look, it was amazing to me. I saw this poll that was done not too long ago. I think it was Politico that said, you know, like 30% of Republicans think that Trump should get an extra 2 years because of the investigation. I'm going, that's constitutionally not possible. But, you know, there's part of me that would go, you know, if Trump declared it, that 30%, the base, they'd be okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, you take it one step further and try to imagine what they're thinking will happen instead. Because this isn't always worship of Trump, it's fear of a Democrat, you know, which has been vilified as a sort of demonic monster coming in. And so they just don't know what the hell's going to happen. Like, what if Hillary returns, you know, something like that. So I feel like there is a base that I'd say is kind of low in terms of the percent of the country, you know, maybe 5%, maybe 8%. That's enough, because the base is, you know, extremely radical and often calls for violence. And it doesn't take a lot of people to cause a huge problem. I think there are a lot of people who just simply hate the Democrats. You know, they're Republicans, they're conservatives, they're often very anti-abortion, they're sometimes, very into the evangelical movement and think that the Republicans are kind of divinely appointed. You know, there's all sorts of stuff going around. It's not always just Trump, but the fact, though, that he can just talk pretty much on a daily basis about how he's not going to leave office, how he's going to extend his term, you know, like maybe for several more terms, maybe for a few more years, and that people don't treat that seriously. They don't take it as a warning. They don't take it as a crisis. I mean, that is bad. I have seen this in so many cases. You know, when I was in graduate school, I was studying Uzbekistan, and, you know, the second term of the president was ending, and I was there for when it got magically extended into a third term, and then when it got magically extended into a fourth term, and then he died. And that is how they got rid of their dictator that they had for 27 years. That is what happens. You know, that happens much more often than people expect. And so, you know, folks have to realistically confront that we may be at the end of 4-year term limits, and we have to do everything we can to preserve that law.
It reminds me of the Sinclair Lewis book, Can't Happen Here, and Trump playing the Buzz Windrip character.
Yeah, I mean, it can happen here. It has happened here for Black folks, for Native Americans, for Japanese during World War II. I mean, people are somewhat naive sometimes, or maybe just limited thinking of it in terms of white American history, about what's happened here legally and how little outcry there was about all these things, how there was endless debate about, you know, is a Black person fully human or are they merely 3/5 of a person? I mean, that was a mainstream actual debate. And if you were on the side of, yes, they're fully human, your life itself would be in jeopardy if you're an abolitionist. You know, I always think about Elijah Lovejoy. You know, he was a journalist in the 1830s, so living in St. Louis, writing about all the same issues I'm writing about now. And, you know, he got chased across the river by St. Louis racists into Alton, Illinois, and then they eventually hunted him down, took his printing press, threw it in the river, and killed him. That's how, you know, that's American history. That's the part of history they don't teach enough, and they should teach more, because it's a warning sign of what can happen again.
Yeah, and you bring up the 3/5 person thing from the Constitution. You know, this is what, I don't care what any of them say, this is what the original intentist, this is what they talk about. White landowning males, control, only being able to vote, and, you know, dehumanizing the others. And, you know, to me, this is what they've been whispering about to each other for so long that now they feel, because of Trump, because, as Jeff Daniels pointed out, they now press the race button. They now feel emboldened to push through on.
You cut out a little. I think it's tornado aftermath. Who are you talking about here that feels like they can push the race button?
Well, the Republican Party. Jeff Daniels said in his little spiel on MSNBC that the Republicans, you know, outside of they don't want to pay taxes, you know, it's about race. It's about the 3/5 person thing.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that was happening throughout Trump's campaign. And again, people didn't take it seriously. You know, he launched his campaign by saying that Mexicans were rapists and murderers. That should have been disqualifying. I mean, it cost him The Apprentice. People forget how quickly our standards change. You know, back in 2015, when he said that, that was thought of as such an abhorrent and evil thing to say that no person could have a television series after making that kind of comment. That would make you canceled. Now that's something, you know, people say, including Trump, but many others, all the time. And the standards of, you know, ethical behavior, of respect to, you know, non-white citizens, to migrants, to immigrants. I mean, we have an incredible rise in hate crimes. We have the biggest synagogue shooting, massacre in American history. We have endless attacks on Muslims. I mean, I can go on and on. But, you know, this kind of rhetoric, it leads to serious physical violence on innocent people, and that itself is a crisis. I mean, that's why I'm very frustrated when people make these sort of, you know, what they call a political calculation, but to me it's a dehumanizing calculation. Like, if you're going to look at a poll number instead of a human being, like, I just don't know what's wrong with you. You know, there are lives on the line. There are people who are threatened. There are people who are being threatened in a way that kind of, you know, it implies genocide is coming. If you look at what they're doing on the border, if you look at how they're treating and targeting migrants and dehumanizing him and all of his speeches, like, people should very much be up in arms about this and willing to fight it, not just kind of, you know, looking the other way and pretending things can just go back to normal like Joe Biden does. That is what will doom democracy, is that kind of attitude.
I'm with you. Last question I had for you. Yesterday that came out, there were a couple of whistleblowers, 5 whistleblowers from Deutsche Bank, who claimed that they wanted the higher-ups to report possible criminal activity by Trump Organization, by Kush, by his organization, and Deutsche Bank didn't do it. I remember this being a story a while ago. Is this new? Is this something that is now shocking? Where do you put this?
It's not new. And, you know, Trump has had a really corrupt relationship with Deutsche Bank, for about a decade. Kushner has as well. This has been covered before. It's covered enough that some guy wrote an entire book about it. And I'm kind of like, you know, hey, Mueller, you know, were you going to do anything about this? Like, we're at the point where each of the crimes have their own book, and the crime will go on a book tour instead of us getting hearings. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, the point of that report is that, you know, about Deutsche Bank is Kushner should be in prison. Kushner should not be in the White House. As I said a billion times, he's a major, major national security threat. And you see Deutsche Bank, you know, popping up in so many different contexts. And again, once more, this is why we need hearings. And since they're not able to have their oversight hearings, because people keep dodging subpoenas, they need to do impeachment hearings, which gives you greater subpoena power. So hopefully, we will not just have crimes exposed, but have crimes punished, because they don't care if these crimes are exposed. They don't care if people see them. They only care about serious consequences. And the only kind of consequence they're going to respect is legal, not social, not cultural, not anything about democracy. They don't care. So, yeah, people need to act.
Yeah, I'm with you. Sarah, I appreciate the time. Always good talk with you. Always, well, scary.
All right, then. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Make sure you check out Sarah's podcast, Gaslit Nation, one of the best on the podcasts. Also, the book, View from Flyover Country. One of my favorite people to have on the program. She's fantastic. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.